non-Bears fans, another edition of the Chicago Bears. Are we doing this? Are we doing this for the YouTube side? Bear Claw? We doing the Bear Claw right there? Another edition of the Chicago Bears podcast coming your way. People trying to get on Caleb Hills for inventing the Bear Claw. He didn't invent it, but he did make it cool. That's what I'm saying. He didn't invent it, but he definitely made it cool. Hey, J-Mac, you was on them sidelines. Did you ever see anybody on in the stands throwing the Bear Claws at you?
Yeah, all the time. You know, exactly. The mascot, you know, the mascot guy, not the mascot, but the guy who's dressed like the mascot.
Oh, yeah. The Bears super fan that's in the Hall of Fame.
I got a picture with him, and the picture I have with him, he's like this. He's like, you know, he's doing the bear claw, whatever it's called, the bear claw, the bear pose.
Is that crazy to say bear claw? Bear man, yeah. First off, shout out to him. But is bear claw wild? Feels wild a little bit. Yeah, we'll move on. Appreciate y'all for tuning in.
Bear claw can be a donut. It can be a pose.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Oh yeah, definitely could be a donut. Appreciate y'all tuning in, showing love. Hit that like button, subscribe to the page, leave a 5-star view. Listen, we got a lot to talk about as we just heard Ryan Poles talking on the Pat McAfee show, and he had some interesting things to say. Some things that have made me change a lot of the things that I talked about in the offseason. I don't know if I changed them, but we haven't had this moment on the Chicago Bears podcast where I've had to just been like, hey, I'd be wrong. Seems like I'd be wrong. There are times where I'd be wrong. I am okay with that. There will be more times where I'll be wrong. So we got to talk about all that. And J-Mac with a little bit of insight on our new punter. We heard Ryan Poles talk about him as well. So all that and more today's episode of the Chicago Bears podcast. Hit that like button, subscribe to the page. Lead a 5-star review. Y'all know what to do. J-Mac, how's it going, my guy?
It's going good, man. Recruiting season for high school. So a lot of great college coaches coming through, visiting kids, evaluating kids, coming to morning workouts, afternoon lifts, getting their eyes on potential prospects that can help better their program. And I'm just thankful they're making their stop over at Carmel Catholic High School. We got a lot of kids that are putting in the work, you know, in the classroom first, you know, in the weight room, on the field, and they're going to have opportunities to go on and play football beyond high school. So it's been awesome, man. But the main thing is, you know, off season, you know, we're lifting, we're running, we're conditioning. You know, the season's going to be right around the corner, and, you know, the Corsairs will be ready. So I'm excited. Can't wait to get started. But I'm also appreciative of all the coaches that are coming through.
Man, this is about to become the Chicago Bears and Carmel High School podcast. You know what I'm saying? Like, we about to have weekly updates because I ain't going to stunt with you.
I'm always going to plug my guys.
I'm not going to stunt with you, dog. Like, going through it, first off, I need some merch out here. You know what I mean? I don't know.
I got you.
Can you wear other high school merch? Is that sacred? Is that a sacred thing?
I'm a coach, of course.
You getting employed by them. That's a little different. Yeah. I don't know. I might have to check back home with the city on that. Yeah, I'm North Chicago Warhawks till I die. So I don't know if you can wear another high school as you did, but I support y'all. You know what I mean? Listen, we didn't do a lot of winning.
Yeah, my guy, Coach Hill over there in North Chicago, I'm giving him a shout out. He's an avid listener of the he watches the podcast, listens to it, huge Bear fan.
Shout out, Coach Hill.
He's doing good things, Coach
Hill. Now, I will say, Coach Hill, this is the most excited I've been for football in a little while in North Chicago. We went through some lean years there, my boy. Yeah. We was getting beat ugly. You know what I mean?
It happens, man. It happens, man. Hey. It's high school ball, man.
Trying to get the Michael Turner days back. Let's get back to that. Let's jump into the show, though, J-Mac. We heard Ryan Poles talk today on the Pat McAfee show. I thought very interesting. And some of the things that he had to say made me have to take a step back on some of the ways that I felt during the offseason. By the way, this is brought to you by the Hard Rock Casino in Northern Indiana. Las Vegas-style game in just 30 minutes from Soldier Field, exit 6, right off of I-80-94. He had a comment in the very beginning where Pat basically goes on to ask him, you know, kind of jokingly, when did you know? When was it done? When were you, hey, we're locked in on Caleb Williams as the number one pick? And when you hear it out of the horse's mouth, you can't sit there and say anything. Ryan Poles said that he's loved this kid's tape from the beginning and just needed to get to know the person, which translated in my brain to Justin Fields never had a chance here. And that Ryan Poles was enamored with this young man's skill set, his play style from the very beginning. I would assume, right, maybe Oklahoma, he's not there yet, but when you see the Heisman season, you're heading into that next season saying, I'm all in on this kid unless something crazy happens here. And Ryan Poles proved true to his word. I have no problems admitting that I was wrong because I thought that this was a tougher decision for Ryan Poles. But how he made it sound on the Pat McAfee show today was Justin Fields was playing out his final season in the Chicago Bears uniform, and he knew it the entire time. J-Mac, what'd you take away from the interview?
I agree. I think he knew what direction he was going. You know, he was going to go into definitely before the season was over. And, you know, it's sad because, like, he had that ultimate poker face. Like, he knew he kept it close to the vest, in which he wasn't going to let nothing out there. I mean, he split a city. He split Chicago. You had guys on for Fields. You had guys for Williams. I mean, we're butting heads. I mean, you know, in the post-game show, you know, we get in fights in the post-game show talking about who they going to take. You know, what should
Jeff
they do?
Jeff Miller was putting multiple headlocks during the post-game show.
You and our guy Jeff up at the post-game show, man. You know, it was crazy, man. But, yeah, I think he knew. I think, you know, like you said, going back to seeing what he did during that Heisman campaign, but then also seeing what he did last year, not having a defense, you know, having to go out there and really put a team on his shoulders, you know, I think he knew, you know, even more so then. And then going through the process, like he talked about, knowing the person over the player, that really just solidified what they were going to do. So that pick, he already knew with conviction of who he wanted to be leading this offense, who he wanted the face of the franchise to be in terms of the quarterback position. And that's why he even said, hey, look, I had to wait 5 minutes before I turned in the pick. Like, hell, he would have just, you know, the draft would have started. He would have, Roger, here's the card. Like, before you get, take the card up to the podium when you open up the draft.
And when he talks about it, right, he says that he was 100% in on Caleb Williams at the top 30. Of course, we know, right, you have to let the season play out to get the first overall pick. We had the Panthers pick. That was the pick that we were hoping ended up being pretty bad. But I'm assuming that he felt some inkling of, you know, early in the season of like, hey, listen, we're good to go here. But for a GM to say that he was locked in on a guy that early on, right, because, I mean, listen, we knew the Panthers were bad by week three. We knew that we were in a great position with this draft pick pretty much by week three of the season. Like, oh, I don't think this is going to get better. Like, they have no offensive line, no defensive line. Adam Thielen's the best receiver that they got out there. We got their running back. I mean, we got their wide receiver. So I think it's very interesting. And you kind of went through a similar situation of this. But I guess, right, you hope that it turns out better than what it went through with Thomas Jones and Cedric Benson. Rest in peace to Ceddie B. What is your thought process? Or I guess, what's it like going through that where you know, right? Because I would assume people in the organization knew that a GM may be locked in another direction than one of the guys that's on your team.
Yeah, I think, well, as a player back then, the situation with Ceddie B and T. Jones, we knew we had two great backs. Obviously, Ced was a younger guy. They took Ced, I think it was fourth overall, if I remember correctly, in that draft. And I think that I'm not going to say they knew they were going to get rid of T. Jones. I think there was I don't think there was a way they can keep both of them in terms of, you know, financially. Having both high paid guys in the same room was tough. And it was tough for us as players. You know, we a lot of guys, you know, T. Jones was a great locker room guy, a great leader, you know, a great person, a great teammate, still a great friend to this day.
Yeah.
And so great actor, you know, great protein shake maker with all the
you ain't lying, though. He's not
you know, I got to throw a shot at him.
Hey, we need a sponsorship, brother. Let's work it out.
great muscle milk connoisseur, T. Jones. He's going to kill me when he sees this. But Ceddie B was also a young, talented running back who was, you know, he had the resume coming out of Texas. He was, and when he came here, he was every bit as good as he was and what you saw on tape at Texas. So, you know, that situation was tough because, you know, they invested in a high draft pick and they wanted to go in that direction. So, you know, I think the main thing is when you come in as a rookie, and we keep talking about Caleb, and we've talked about this before, like the main thing that he has to do is when he comes in is, you know, you got to earn the respect of the locker room, earn the trust of the guys, show that you're just one of the guys. And I think it's, you know, from what I've seen and what I've heard, and you've heard Poles talk about it, you know, on the Pat McAfee show in terms of him already reaching out to the guys, him texting guys. You know, we see pictures of him and DJ Moore out at USC running routes and stuff like that. Like, that's huge. That is huge for a veteran player in that locker room. That is huge for guys who don't, even for the defensive guys. When they see that, hey, we've got our number one draft pick in here, reaching out to guys, putting in work, you know, trying to build relationships with guys early. That's showing something. That's showing that he wants to be a good teammate. He wants to be just one of the guys. And I think that goes a long way in terms of earning the respect of the locker room early. Because when you get that respect of the guys, especially on offense, who's going to go to bat for you, they're going to do anything for you. They're going to have your back. And you saw that last year, right? Justin Fields, he had the locker room, right? He may not have lit the field on fire each and every week, but there's one thing that you could not say about Justin Fields, right? You can't say he wasn't a great teammate. Yeah. And you could not say that his teammates didn't have his back, because we saw that all last year. How many times do we see a guy come on and say, hey, Justin's our quarterback, Justin's our guy.
Yeah.
Justin has a locker room. So I think Caleb, you know, if he gets on that level and he produces the way we hope he will, I think, you know, he's going to have a tremendous career, and it's going to be great for everybody here in Chicago.
And I think what I love about it too is when you look at Caleb and you hear, right, like you said about polls today, he's reached out to all of his teammates. He's talked with all of his teammates. Anybody that may have had even any inkling of an issue. We even heard yesterday on 670, I believe, that you know, Caleb Williams and Jalen Johnson cleared the air on the whole Hollywood attitude comments. Jalen yeah. Johnson said that I cleared the air and was like, hey, that wasn't what it was supposed to be. Excuse me. I don't know you. He hit me and was like, hey, I'm a winner. I just want to win. We had the conversation. I'm like, it's all good. And then I talked a little trash about Utah, USC, and it was all good. And I think that's the thing, right? Caleb is not shying away from any of this. That's the part that I love. He's not shying away from people's perceptions of him. He's not saying, hey, wait until you see me and then you'll get to know me. He's saying, listen, let me introduce myself to you, because I'm going to be your teammate. I'm going to be the guy. I'm the guy that now, listen, I think when you hear Ryan Pohl's comments, you hear how long the expectations have been that this kid is going to be a savior or the answer for Chicago. But he's taking all of that and saying, I'm still the quarterback of this team. I need to go out here. I need to talk with my guys. I need to get to know guys on the defensive side. I need to get to know guys on the offensive side. I love that he keeps bringing up the janitors. Shout out to the former janitor here. Yeah, I mean, I did a little janitorial service fresh out of high school. Shout out to all the janitors out there at Soldier Field. I don't know, that's that job. As somebody who's been in environmental service, they like to give us fancy names. yeah. Soldier Field Environmental Service gotta suck.
Oh man, you imagine that's a whole nother segment. That's a whole other show.
Hey, dog, that's gotta man, suck.
But I'm gonna put a hazmat suit on when we do that podcast.
Man, you ain't lying, dog. But the one thing that I will say is just that, listen, I am okay giving my opinion on a matter and sticking with my opinion until I hear that my opinion is wrong. And then I have to stand up and say I was wrong. I defended Justin Fields. I said that Ryan Poles was all in on Justin Fields. I said that it was a tough decision for Ryan Poles. Ryan Poles came out today and said, this wasn't a tough decision. I've had this decision in my mind for 2 years now.
Yeah, I agree. And that's how it shapes out. I mean, even there was an interview in I was watching Caleb on an interview, and I feel bad because I can't give credit to the people that conducted the interview. And it was really good. And Caleb was saying how, you know, this year he really watched a lot of the Bears games. So, like, I mean, he knew he was going number one.
It was on Pivot, wasn't it? Wasn't that on the Pivot?
Maybe it was on Pivot. Yeah, it might have been. Yep, Ryan Clark, shout out to the Pivot. Huge, huge fan. They do a great job. But, like, he knew he was going number one. It's just a matter of how the dominoes fell, where the Bears going to end up holding that pick. And so he said, you know, he started watching. He watched a lot of the Bears games and stuff like that. So, you know, when Ryan Poles, they asked him, did you tell Caleb that you were going to take him number one before the draft? Post is like, no, I didn't tell him. And, you know, Caleb, he's on social media. I like it because he's normal. Hey, so he's normal. Like he's tweeting.
He's a 22-year-old kid.
Yeah. Even as guys were getting drafted, right, his teammates and other draft picks that the Bears were picking, he was tweeting about it. Hey, congrats. Let's get it. Let's go. Congratulations. Like, That shows more into his character. You know what I'm saying? It wasn't just about him. He's happy for his guys. He's happy for the guys that he's going to be playing with here in Chicago. But I think Ryan Pohl did a good job of not telling him, you know, because he may have been, you know, hey, something may happen. Hey, he might have had, you know, the Bears' fingernails may have been painted too early or something like that. It may have leaked out. But, yeah, man, he knew he was going number one. But I think it's, you know, the way that Ryan Pohl kept this close to the vest. It speaks, you know, it's tremendous on what he did with this draft and the way it just set up. I mean, ever since he set foot as GM, in terms of the team that he inherited, right, that first year, bringing pieces to what he did last year and to where we're at now. I mean, he's done a tremendous job. Like, whether you love Fields, you didn't like Caleb, whatever, one thing you cannot say about Ryan Poles is, like, he has done a great job. He has done a tremendous job, man. It's, you know, it's exciting, man. It really is.
Yeah, and I keep telling Muzz, like, I it's almost like when I hear people criticize the job that he's done, all I keep having to remind people of is Ryan Pace was in this building 3 years ago.
Yeah.
We were in cap hell 3 years ago.
Getting the brakes beat off us.
3 years ago. We had no answers offensively 3 years ago. We had our best wide receiver 3 years ago was DJ Moore, or not DJ Moore, Darnell Mooney. Three years ago. So to look at where the Chicago Bears team has gone, and then on top of that, right, Caleb Williams here, love it, DJ Moore, Keenan Allen, Gerald Everett, DeAndre Swift, we talked about all these weapons a ton. But then you go out and you also have nine, and on the top of your board, we hear Ryan Poles talk about how Roma Dunze for us was a can't-miss guy. And, of course, you do all this deliberating in the offseason. What if they trade back? What if they move up? What if they do this? Blah, 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 blah. And then he's just like, nah, we're just going to take this guy here that we believe is going to be an elite athlete, who we believe is going to be dominant, who people are comparing. The two names that I've heard the most come out of this have been Larry Fitzgerald and Ja'Marr Chase. Now, you got to get on the field and prove it, right? Everybody gets a great comp for the most part when people are doing these comps. But just watching how the relationship between him and Caleb has already gotten off to already started off, watching how Rome played in college and the fact that he's got Keenan Allen and DJ Moore ahead of him on the depth chart, it really does speak to the job that Ryan Poles has done to put the Bears in an amazing situation. And I think that first round is just the icing on the cake.
Yeah, I think, like he said, at number nine, like, he didn't consider trading, you know, especially if Rome was there, Rome was higher on their board. He said, you know, the board is based off colors. So I'm assuming Rome was green. It means go. Like, Rome's there, go, grab him. You know what I mean? Whatever. Whatever you got to do, we're going to get this guy if he's there at number nine. And like you said, interesting comps that you brought up. You bring up Larry Fitzgerald and Ja'Marr Chase, right? Two different type of receivers.
Very different receivers.
Two very different. But when you look at it, you know, Ryan Poles talked about Rome is a blend of, you know, he's got, like, height, weight, like, in terms of the things he can do. You know, he's got size, but he can do things that a smaller receiver can do, meaning, you know, get in and out of your breaks. You can line him in the slot as well. So when you have a talent like that, you go grab him. And you look at Larry Fitzgerald, a bigger receiver, not the fastest guy, but, you know, he can attack that football. Big hands, can make every type of contested catch. And you look at Ja'Marr Chase, a guy that can, you know, do a lot of different things because he's so athletic, he's so agile, and he has speed. You know what I mean? So You put those two in a blender, and, you know, you put that in your smoothie cup, and you get a Romo Dunze. You know what I'm saying? A guy that can do both things. And that's what you're trying to look for. Initially, you want receivers that have a rare skill set. And you look at all the receivers that was drafted high in this draft. You even look at Malik Nabers, Marvin Harrison Jr. Marvin Harrison Jr. is the same type of guy. Bigger receiver, right? Going to be bigger than the average defensive back that he's going against, right? But he can also run the entire route tree, has speed. You know what I'm saying? So when you have guys that have that rare combination of athleticism compared with size and speed and have good hands, that presents a matchup nightmare for any defensive coordinator, because now you can put this guy anywhere and how am I going to defend it? And now the Bears, you have three of those guys. Yep. You've got a young guy in Odunze. You've got Keenan Allen, a veteran who's probably one of the best route runners in the league. You know, even though he's getting older, he's coming off his best year. And then you've got DJ Moore, who's just – he's just a dog. He's just a dog on the field, can do anything, can take the top off of defense, can run intermediate routes. He's tough and make contested catches. You know, will take a hit while making a contested catch. Like, and we saw that week in and week out last year. And, you know, DJ Moore is a guy who's going to produce no matter who's at quarterback. You look at Carolina before he came here. Like, how many quarterbacks did he have? And he was still – showing the same productivity. Last year, he comes here first year with Justin Fields and has a career year. So, I mean, it's exciting to add a Romo Dunze to what we can say now is a strong receiver room. Just like we talked about last year, we're like, damn, like, who's going to catch these passes? Like,
right.
is Claypool going to pan out? Like, damn, that's what we were last year. Like, Claypool's not even practicing. Darnell Mooney, where's the relationship? Where's Darnell Mooney? It's so good to pound your chest and be like, man, we got some receivers, man. Like, this Bears offense, there's a possibility that the passing game could be the highlight of a Bears offense instead of a running game. When have we ever said that? Never. You've never said that.
Yeah.
Maybe when Brandon Marshall and Alshon
Jeffery. With B. Marsh and Alshon, I was going to say. That's probably the only
time. That was a good offense, Martellus Bennett, but I mean.
I feel like I got to go back and look at that. I feel like we didn't rank very high in touchdowns. I think we ranked very high in yards.
But yeah, I think receivers go over 1,000 yards, and I think, you know, I mean, has there ever been three receivers gone over 1,000 yards?
Gotta be right at this point.
I'm assuming there has been.
I
don't know what team. I'm gonna ask my guy Doug Coletti, who's our statistician. If I said it right,
that was a Jamar Charles right there.
Yeah, I don't know what that statistician. I can't pronounce that, man.
Statistician,
whatever it's called.
I think one thing that I did find interesting, speaking of a statistician, was Ryan Poles' talk on this offense and how he wants to use this offense, how he wants it to be a balanced offense. And that kind of, listen, all of the players that we have, all of the excitement that we have, it does come back to me to how are the coaches going to utilize this team? How are the coaches going to go out there and utilize the offense that they had last season? Shane Waldron was a guy who produced an offense that put out 230 passing yards a game, 92 rushing yards a game, 300 total yards per game, which I believe was 21st in the NFL. They were 28th in rushing. They got a little bit better in the second, a little bit better in the second half of the season, but not much. But just a lot of problems with an offense that you look at and say, there's some pieces on that thing. Right. You got wide receivers out the wazoo. You got the running game. You had the young running back come in last season. Right. There's a lot to add to there. And you didn't get as much out of that. Now my focus goes to Shane Waldron for this offseason, this training camp. And as we head into the season on, OK, we know that you can develop the quarterback position, but what are you going to do to develop this offense? Yes, I know where you come from. I know what your roots are. I know that, right, everywhere that you've been and you've been in different situations. And you've gotten the most out of your quarterbacks in most of these situations. But, I mean, I have a very, not concerned, but intrigued look at what the offensive coordinator is going to be, especially hearing Ryan Poles go out and say that he believes that he wants to have a balanced offense. By the way, 1,000-yard trios in NFL history, EO dropping this in the chat, the 80s mm-hmm. Chargers, the 89 Skins, 95 Falcons, 04 Colts, and the 08 Cardinals.
Cardinals
is Super Bowl, right?
Yeah, that's Larry Fitzgerald, right? Who else is on that team? Was Santonio Holmes on that team?
Santonio Holmes, I feel, is right. Yeah.
Fitzgerald, Santonio Holmes, and who's the other one for that Cardinals team? You know?
The third one, so it's Larry Fitzgerald, Anquan Boldin, and the third one is a super long shot, Steve Breaston. Oh, yeah,
out of Michigan, right? Steve Breaston.
Yes.
Yeah. Wow. And the Colts, it probably was 04. Oof. Who was it? Marvin Harrison, right?
Yeah.
Was it Reggie Wayne?
Has to be.
Yeah.
I want to say. I don't think he was there. Dallas Clark.
No, but another white guy.
Another white guy. I love it.
Oh. Who is it?
Brandon Stokely.
Yeah,
Brandon Stokely had a 1,000-yard season.
I bet you can't guess where Brandon Stokely went to school.
You're beating your chest about it. So is it?
I can't remember the exact school either. I was trying to see.
Louisiana. I was like, wait a minute now.
It's in Louisiana, right? I know it's Louisiana. I think it's the Raging Cajuns, southwestern Louisiana, right?
Brandon Stokely.
Isn't the Raging Cajuns from Waterboy? No, that's not.
the Raging Cajuns. I think that's where
I'm trying to see this.
He went to the Raging Cajun football team. Hey. Correct. University of Louisiana Lafayette.
Come on, Pat. J-Mac knows his stuff, man. Come on.
Ah.
You got to know your stuff, man. But yeah, I think
what a pull.
That's great stuff by EO though, because that's, I mean, you could have that possibility, but I think going back to what you were saying in terms of his offense and Shane Waldron, I think, you know, it's one thing. I think he has to look at it like this, right? You get excited as a coordinator and as a coach having so many weapons. You want to do so many things, and there's so many matchups that you can create in terms of mismatches and stuff like that. But at the same time, you do have to keep in mind, I have a rookie quarterback. No matter how great he is, this is a different game. This is a big step in competition. You know, a lot of the things that he got away with at USC, I don't think he's going to be able to get away with here, you know, in the NFL, especially in the division that we play that has a lot of great defenses.
Right.
So I think this offense still has to go in terms of development, in terms of what I'm installing as Caleb Williams goes. So, you know, the more he can retain and execute, the more we'll put in. But if he's regressing, then we've got to slow down what we're installing. So, you know, we've got to enable him to be able to take in what he can take in and let him progress at a rate that's going to keep his confidence level high and keep him producing. You know, we got to let him be the point guard that he is. I mean, you see at USC, I mean, that ball's all over the field. He's a point guard playing quarterback, and we've got to let him play that way. And if you put too much on him and, you know, stuff happens, I mean, that's the fastest way of killing a quarterback's confidence is, you know, putting too much in, making them uncomfortable. Yeah. We saw that last year, right? We were installed. We had schemes and things that they weren't geared toward our quarterback strengths. So yeah, Justin out there looking crazy, holding the ball, and you're trying to force an offense on a quarterback that is not a fit for that quarterback. So, and I hope Shane Waldron, you know, he's a high level coach. He knows what he's doing, but I hope he does it the right way.
And that's really what it comes down to, right? Is don't get too locked in on one thing. I mean, you look at them, right? They were 16th in passing. They were 28th in rushing. Yep. They were 17th in points per game. You have to look at that formula and say, hey, that didn't work. Not to say you change everything that you're doing, but maybe go back to the drawing board and look at how to even it out a little bit. That's why I like Ryan Poles saying, you know, I want this to be a more even offense. I want this to be a more equal opportunity offense where maybe we can be one of those teams with 3,000 yard receivers. I don't know why the Bears wouldn't have the ability to, right? It kind of comes down to what the quarterback is able to do and how quickly he's able to hit the field running, right? But you can't sit there and continue to just do the same things that you did, because we can't say that that Seattle doesn't have a similar weaponry group. I don't know what Caleb Williams is going to be in the NFL yet. As yet, I believe he's going to be good. But you know what I do know they have over there? They got multiple wide receivers.
Yeah.
They got running backs. They had a solid offensive line. It was not a great offensive line, but it was a solid offensive line. They had an offense that you should have absolutely been able to do more with. You shouldn't be looking at it and saying that it was the 17th ranked offense in the NFL, and yet that's what Shane Waldron ended up being able to produce. That does, not to say that I'm worried about it, because I think that everybody learns from their situations, but if there's a concern that I have left, it is that. Yeah, you did develop Geno Smith. You did get more out of Russell Wilson than maybe we saw from him at that point in his career. But what did that translate to?
Yeah. I think, and a lot of times too, is like, you got to get lucky too, right? In terms of when you look at numbers and stuff like that, you got to get lucky. Like, I think the running game is, that number's distorted up there in Seattle. He had injuries with Kenneth Walker, stuff like that. But
yeah.
That's the reason why you look at our backfield now. You got DeAndre, you've got Khalil, you got Roshan. You know what I mean? It's going to be a rotation. We see in this league a lot of these backs are not shouldering the load all by themselves. So you got to have a good rotation of backs. And you got to have depth. You know, talking about the draft, you know, we talked about in our mock draft, we wanted them to trade the pick at 9, trade back. And in our mock draft, we drafted a tackle.
Right.
They ended up taking a tackle in the third. You know, a local kid from Hinsdale Central, Kieran Amagaji. And, you know, I think he's more of a developmental guy at depth. And, you know, you find guys that fit the profile that you're looking for, that has the athleticism to execute your scheme. And I think that's what they did. And you try to create competition. And that's what Ryan Poles has done his entire time here. You know, even his first year here when he didn't have a lot of picks and he made all these trades and turned, you know, a minimal amount of picks into a lot of picks and try to create competition on his roster. When you look at his roster now, there's a lot of competition, but there's also a lot of blue chip guys at key spots. You look at linebackers like TJ Edwards is a blue chip guy. Tremaine Edmonds is a blue chip guy. Jalen Johnson contract extension is a blue chip guy, you know, and now you look at the receiver, DJ Moore, a blue chip receiver, Keenan Allen, blue chip receiver, you know? Yeah. So it's building the roster in a way in which, you know, he got creative. You know, he pulled in a haul with Carolina that really catapulted this whole rebuild that we're seeing. And, you know, like I said before, it's, you know, being able – the numbers in terms of you're talking about offense and defense, you got to have the guys that can make plays, but you also got to have the depth, depth in which guys can come in and play if somebody goes down and you still get the same productivity. So I think, you know, in Seattle, I think they faced a lot of that, but I'm not making a pass for Shane Waldron. Regardless of who's in there, you know, you've got to make sure that you're putting your guys in position to make plays and execute at a high level if you want to make it to the playoffs and if you want to be – you know, on top of the division, like we keep saying, something that we haven't been in a long time.
Yeah, no, and I hear you on that. And I think for me, my thing is I don't know how many games – Kenneth Walker played 15 games. I don't know how many games he finished, right? I know he had games where he got hurt mid-game. Yeah. Everything's like that, wasn't able to finish the game.
Maybe I'm wrong with him then, maybe.
No, he did. He did deal with some injury. I think he fucked through a lot of it, though. But, like, you look at it, you know what I'm saying? And there's a lot of games where just rushing attempts overall – I'm not even saying specifically Kenneth Walker, but, like, rushing attempts overall – it's like what we saw last season. And that's what I don't want to see, right? Where it's like,
I definitely want to see that.
Hey, y'all got six attempts to figure it out between the three of y'all versus them where it was two, right? Where you see some games where it's like Kenneth Walker has 10 carries and who's the backup there? Zach Charbonnet.
Yeah, Zach Charbonnet.
He's got another six, and it's like, all right, figure it out from that. That's just not enough, right? And what that translates to, and this is the biggest thing for me, situational awareness. That's what I want to see. I want to see, like Ryan Pohl said, an even distribution, but I also want to see situational awareness. They had a 33%, 34%, I want to say, completion percentage on third down. That's a problem.
Yeah, and you talk about, well,
you're getting one out of every three third downs to be completely.
Look at how much did we talk about this last year?
Yeah.
Well, even on fourth down conversions, right? You talk about, and that goes beyond situational awareness. That just goes to overall creativity. A lot of times we got too creative. You know, a lot of times we saw that damn speed sweep running east and west to get 1 yard. You know what I'm saying? Trust me, I'm there on the sideline pissed off. You know what I mean? Like, and not just everybody, because we got 1 yard, man. Come on. You know, so I just hope that whatever he does, that, you know, it's easy to get excited and you know, you have so many weapons and now, okay, we got all these elite receivers. Pass.
Yeah. Oh, we're going to be throwing the ball in the air. My prayer is 60-40. I'm not going to lie. That's my prayer. Because I think last year with Shane, it was like 70-30. Like, Shane was playing Madden that time. You know what I'm saying?
I think now when you look at this, the running back room, and, you know, I was a huge Deontay Foreman fan last year. When he had an opportunity, he did some good things. But now I think you have three backs in the room that can all, you know, you can be effective in the passing game with these backs. You can split them out. They can come out of the backfield, and they can win a one-on-one matchup with a linebacker. You know what I'm saying? Whereas when Khalil Herbert got hurt, it was more we're pounding that ball in between the tackles, because that's what Deontay Foreman's skill set, you know, that's what it shows you. That's what he can do. But now, you know, DeAndre Swift gets tired, you put in Khalil Herbert. Khalil Herbert gets tired, you put in a Roschon Johnson. You know, and we saw Roschon mainly on third down last year because – He was so good at pass protection.
Block, yeah.
And with him too, you look at, okay, last year was his first year in the league. And for a young back to come in, the hardest thing for you to learn and to be able to execute is pass protection. And he passed that test. He showed you can do that. But now I'm looking to see how he's going to develop as a better runner, as a better playmaker. I feel like, you know, last year he didn't really show me when he had opportunities to be able to make somebody miss in space, all right, or to be able to really accelerate through a hole. What we saw is, you know, a lot of times, yeah, he ran guys over, but a lot of times, right, do you have the ability to set up a guy like you're going to run him over, you know, put your foot in the ground, make a miss, and then take that ball for another 20, 30 yards? Like, that's the next level of running back play, you know. Right. And I think with him having another year under his belt, you know, being more comfortable with the speed of the game, and I'm not going to say being more comfortable with this offense, because everybody's got to learn a whole new offense again, you know. So, but in him, in terms of knowing the speed of the game, you know, the physicality of the game. You know, normally rookies that second year, especially as a back, they'll take a next step. And if he takes the next step, which I think he will, now you have three solid backs in which that volume of carry should go up just because you have three quality backs that can get it done for you.
And all I ask is, this is really the bottom line for me. Let the quarterback dictate it. Mm-hmm. Right. We saw a team like take your two teams that were in the Super Bowl last year. Isaiah Pacheco was not getting the football that often. Every time he did, you heard the Fred Flintstone feet going. You know what I mean? That's how he runs. Yeah, that's exactly how he runs. You know what I mean? Big Fred Flintstone guy. Yeah. But Isaiah Pacheco was not getting the ball on a huge basis last year. The Kansas City Chiefs were 25th in rush attempts last season. But you know why? I got Pat freaking Mahomes. Yeah, every time I turn around, this guy can go off and put the ball in the air and he can make magic happen and blah, blah, blah. Now, maybe they want to be a little more balanced because offensively they had a much more down season. Maybe you want to use Pacheco a little bit more this season. But last year, on the flip side of that, now that's the team that won the Super Bowl. The team that lost, they were eighth in rush attempts. Why? Because Brock Purdy ain't Pat Mahomes. Brock Purdy can have those big moments, and he can have those big throws, and he got those things that you love to see from the heck. Seeing him run the football was a surprise. We don't need to see too much of that. We don't want this guy getting hurt. But they realize that, hey, we've got a deadly weapon at running back with Christian McCaffrey, and so we need to utilize that. And so the thing that I want to see is just like if you've got Caleb Williams coming in here year one, and he's just like looking around the field like, I can't miss, and he's slinging it, let him throw.
Yeah,
put the ball in his hands. Don't take it away from him. If he's having some struggle weeks, it's okay to turn around and say, listen, we got to ride our backs a little bit. No did it.
Yeah, and it's like you mentioned, those two teams that are in the Super Bowl, two totally different offenses, right? You would think that the Kansas City Chiefs would be more effective running the ball just because, you know, when you're a defensive coordinator and you look at Pat Mahomes, you're saying, man, I can't put eight in the box because we're not going to have resources to stop the pass because of what he can do, you know, in the passing game. And we look at the 49ers, like, their run sets up everything they do in the passing game. Everything comes off of their run. You know, the pass game and the running game is married. So same formations that they're killing you in the run game, the same formation that they're going to use to throw the ball out of. So, you know, you may have seen outside zone with them 100 times that game. They've been successful on it. But guess what? It's going to be the same formation.
Yeah.
Right? And they're going to take a deep shot at it. And because they have those type of weapons, but that's the creativity and the continuity that Shanahan has with that offense. It's a great offense. And you see that in that offense, and I'm not taking away anything from Brock Purdy. He's shown that he can make plays and beat a team, but he's also in a great system with great players. And the scheme that he runs, you know, I think Shanahan makes sure he always makes sure that he has answers for his quarterback. He always makes sure that whenever his quarterback's setting back the pass, he always has three guys blocking to his backside. So whether when they come out and they line up in a formation and it's only, you know, a guard and tackle to his blind side, he's going to bring a motion or some type of shift over to make sure that, hey, I've got three to his blind side so that way I can protect and get this ball out. And if I'm not doing that, it's going to be some type of rollout. It's going to be some type of naked off of their run game in which he's going to be able to have answers to get that ball out. And that's their offense. And it's hard to stop because everything looks the same.
Yeah. And I'll tell you this. I hope that, and maybe this is just me. Listen, I would love to have a Patrick Mahomes. I just think it's really, really hard to find that guy. I mm-hmm. hope that Caleb Williams is Patrick Mahomes. But I think it's really difficult to find that level of special where it's like he stepped on the field and he was amazing the second he stepped on the field. And he hadn't even figured out NFL offenses until like 2 years later. He was two rings in already, right? My hope is that we have Brock Purdy. Maybe not talent level wise, even though I think Brock Purdy's pretty talented, but the conversation around Caleb.
Yeah.
Because if we're having that conversation, you know what that means? Oh, well, Caleb Williams is only good because he's got Keenan Allen and DJ Moore and Rome Odunze, and he's got DeAndre Swift, and he's got Cole Kmet for another 700 yards. And, you know, Shane Waldron is making his life so easy with the way that he's calling play. That's a dream. Because it means that my offense is humming.
It means winning games.
It means you're winning games. It means they can't figure out how you're doing something at such a high level that they just like, oh, it's witchcraft.
Yep. And offensively, you want to be simply complex.
Ooh, I like
simply
that.
Complex.
Yeah.
And I'm giving away all my
kids up there.
And I got to make sure no high school coach is listening to my stuff too, man. I'm giving away all my stuff. But realistically, like, that's what you want. Like, that's what you want. So you got to edit that out, man. I'm giving all my stuff
you,
away.
You hear some dude on the other side or some coach on the other sideline. Boys, we got to be simply complex.
He like this, right? Writing everything down. Recording our screen, recording the podcast, man. But no, I mean, it's because, I mean, at the same time, right? You know, NFL guys, yes, mentally, you know, we have a higher, you know, IQ of the game. We have a higher mental makeup of the game, right? But at the same time, when you start doing too many things, right, and you're week in and week out, and the playbook's already big enough, and, you know, you're trying to reinvent a whole new scheme in a week, and when you're going against the Packers because you feel like we got to reinvent the wheel to beat this team, you can't play fast. You can't execute at a high level. Because guys are out there thinking, you know, instead of going out there and playing ball, you got receivers out there trying to see, okay, what are we converting this route? Okay, if this corner is pressing me this game, what is my conversion? You know, does that hitch convert to a fade this week? Or is that hitch converting to a slant? Or, you know what I'm saying? Like, if you have that type of game going on in these guys' heads, then they can't play the game fast. And, you know, I hope that Shane Waldron, you know, I hope that this offense is simply complex. I really do. And that's what you see from the 49ers. Like, it looks complex, Pat, but they're doing the same thing. It's a different formation, right? Just different people, right? It may not be Christian in the backfield running outside zone. They'll put Debo back there, run outside zone. Still outside zone, different formation, still the same play. The line, they'll never mess with the line. Hey, outside zone, we running. But the backfield may change motion with a motion or shift. So that's what I want to see from this offense.
No, 100%. I mean, listen, it would be a dream to, like, have not that the pre-snap motion that just confuses teams, but actually a good play after it. Like, that's all I'm asking for. You know what I mean? Like, we got plenty of pre-snap motion and all this stuff with Matt Nagy, and then, you know, he'd run an end around to Anthony Miller for the fourth time in a game and be like, what are you doing right now?
You're shifting in the motion, and you got to do it with a purpose. There has to be some type of intent behind it. Like, you know, am I shifting or am I, you know, doing this motion to gain a numbers advantage to this side of the defense? Or am I just doing it to be cute? Like, you don't do it to be cute. You do it to gain an advantage. You do it to create confusion with a defense. And, you know, I just feel like a lot of times, you know, last year we were doing things and it just didn't make sense. And I just hope that, you know, with a new coordinator, when you have so many weapons at your disposal, that everything we do is intentional, you know, and I hope that's the way it plays out, because there's no excuses no more. We don't have this. We don't have that. We don't have this. And you know what? At the end of the day, you know, me as a Bears fan, I don't care if we got a rookie quarterback. We got weapons now. So it's got to be right. And it's you know, we've got to be productive, because, you know, defensively, yeah, there's some pieces we need to fix over there. You know, even, you know, Poles talked about it. You know, they'll look at guys. They're always going to look at guys and evaluate them and see what the price tag would be on guys that could come in and help, you know, this team. So there's always going to be holes to fill. You're going to have to continue to evaluate guys because of, you know, knock on wood, injuries that do, you know, come about throughout the season. But, you know, it's time for this offense to take a step. You know, it's time for this offense to win a game for us. You know, it's time. And, you know, you made the right picks. You know, people are calling this the greatest draft ever. So whatever you want to call it, let's just make sure the product that we put on the field in terms of scheme, execution, and playing fast. And he talked about the culture. We play fast. We play violent. We play physical. Let's see that type of football, not just on the defensive side of the ball. Let's see it on the offensive side of the ball as well. Let's be violent and physical in the passing game. You know, we're already physical in the run game. Let's be violent and strike fear in defensive coordinators, you know, in terms of our passing game now. But let's make sure that, we're doing it the right way and we're balanced.
No, 100%. I'm with you. I think that there's a lot of excitement around this team right now. I think that when you look at this Bears team, that just hearing Ryan Poles talk today, just hearing the intensity, hearing how he's, you know, how he's excited from every step of the way on this thing and how he's confident at every step of the way on this thing. And I'll say this, seeing kind of Caleb take on some of those traits as well, or not take on, but having some of those traits, right? It feels like you've got the lineup, right? Yeah. Where things are finally starting to go into place where even when Kevin Warren, confident, knows what he wants to do, knows how he wants to get things done. Maybe the prayer was a little crazy. But, you know what I mean? Like, outside of that, for the most part, everything about, you know, how he went about it was, it seemed like a big boy organization. How Ryan Poles has run these last 3 years feels like a big boy organization. Having a quarterback come in, I mean, listen, you're seeing the opposite thing on some of these other teams, right, where it's just like, you know, I'm kind of here. I'm dealing with you. I'm figuring it out. I'm trying to find my play. Caleb's like, he's throwing with DJ Moore already. DJ Moore's talking about how you can see the anticipatory throws and stuff like that already working out in place. He's already reaching out to guys. He's trying to learn everybody's name. He's already talked with Jalen Johnson and anybody who had any comments that maybe were more in favor of Justin than in Caleb Williams and saying, listen, let's clear the air on all of this stuff. Like, I just feel like this is the first time in my life where the entire franchise feels like they have the same mindset. And even when y'all went to the Super Bowl, not to say that the players and the coaches and the GM didn't have the mindset, but I don't know if that went all the way to the top. I think at the top, it was a lot of, hey, we're just prepared for the worst, but still praying for the best.
Yeah. And that's what I was going to ask you too. You kind of answered it, but I was going to ask you and not just you, but, and I'll say it to all the Bears fans that tune in to our pod, you know, every day and every week, is like, for me as a former player and a Bears fan, like, it's just, for me, it just feels good. Like, how good does it feel to see that you have the higher ups that's running the organization? You're starting to see that they're competent. You know, how like, you know what I mean? Like, they're making good moves. His team's getting better. Like, how often have we seen in the past where they make a move, they come out with a press conference and they say things, but then the actions behind it, it doesn't line up. You look at them sideways and I'd be like, what? Like, what? Like, what? Like, huh? Like, what? Listen. You know what I'm saying, Pat? Like, it really feels good that, you know, they're making moves. They're doing things. They're getting, you know, elite players in here. They're creating competition. You know, like Paul said when he came here, he wants to make sure that he doesn't do anything to set this team up for failure. He wants to be competitors every offseason in the draft, in free agency. And he's done that. He's been true to his word.
I think some pink slips got handed out at that draft. Yeah, I mean, I think they was handing the card in on one side and they was handing pink slips out on the other side. Isn't that crazy, like, man? Hey, listen, I'm going to let you know this right now. Based on this pick we just made, you're not going to be here.
Yeah. And look at it like this, right? I think another thing, since we're talking about the draft, and he gave us a lot of insight in terms of, like, the draft war room and how they operate things compared to how other teams, like, I thought it was pretty cool, Pat, how he said that, you know, a lot of work goes into this. There's a lot of scouts out there, and he likes to have everybody in the room.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, can you imagine, like, and I know a lot of scouts, guys who I've played against and played with who are scouts now, and that's a tough job. Like, a lot of these guys don't even live in Chicago. They don't even live here. They're always on the road. You know what I mean? They're out scouting, evaluating, getting write-ups on these guys. They've already started write-ups on the next guys that could be, you know, in the draft next year and their potential. But, like, can you imagine, Pat, you do all that work, and then all of a sudden draft day, the biggest day, the Super Bowl of all the work that you put in, you done turned in all your homework, your evaluation they're going to use, and you get an email, and they say, hey, man, yeah, great job this year. You're not invited to the room. Like, what the hell? Like, are you serious?
I'll say this. I'll bet you there's a lot of people that don't even expect it. Like, it probably was a surprise the first year. Mm-mm. Because of previous regimes you've worked with, previous teams you've been with, different things like that. Like, I'll bet you the first year they probably were like, wait, I'm going to the draft. Like, what, you going to give me a seat at the draft party?
Right.
No. We want you in the room.
Right. You're not just going to take my notes and you're not going to take my homework. You're just going to take my homework and
go look like a genius. Yeah, you know what I mean?
And I'm not even, you know, like.
No, I love it. And I love how, and I think, listen, this all culminates to one thing, winning a championship, finding a way to be at a minimum a perennial playoff team and figuring out the long-term answers. But I do think that there is what I have to keep telling myself to do, I keep telling my BTSD to shut up. Because at every time my Bears traumatic stress disorder, if you were wondering, it also worked for Jay Reinsdorf teams. My Bulls traumatic stress disorder as well. I'm not even in traumatic stress with the White Sox anymore. It's just stress. Like this, it's just where I've been my entire life. It is what it is. But no, like I think that, you know, I keep having to tell myself like, okay, but this is what we're going to do wrong. This is what we're going to do wrong. This is the move that we're going to make that's going to mess things up. Because that's how it's always been done in the past, right? And now it's almost like, no, this is how we're going to do this right. Like, this is why we're going to do this right. This is why this makes sense. This is how we're going to be successful. And at every different stage during the season, I keep having to tell myself, like, no, this is not the same. This is not right. Like when you're evaluating, like you get them old heads as evaluated. I've been a Bears fan for 65 years. And I'm going to tell you right now, ain't nothing changing until they sell the team. And it's like, no, that's not the case anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, this ain't a sell the team situation. This isn't there's not the resources there anymore. This isn't we don't know if guys know what they're doing. I'll tell you what, 2 years in, Ryan Poles knows what he's doing.
Yeah. It's like there's vision. They have clarity. You know, they have a vision with the stadium. They have a vision in the direction that they want the team to go in. And like you talking about, like how many, like I said before, how many times, right, have we seen a GM talking about, we're going to win the NFC North. And then you look at the roster and you're like,
how you going to do it?
And it's just, you know, I mean, it's just, it is what it is. And, you know, it's exciting times. And now they got to put it together. You know, guys are going to have to step up. You got a lot of weapons. But I think that the biggest question on the offense is still offensive line. Offensive line. And that's where it all starts. It starts up front. You can't do anything without that offensive line playing at an elite high level. And, you know, you got guys that can be elite, guys that have the ability to be elite on that offensive line. And I'm talking about, you know, Tevin Jenkins. I'm talking about Darnell Wright, who's going to get better in his second year. You know, same thing I talked about, you know, with Rashawn Johnson. You've got Darnell Wright who came in, who started every game as a rookie, which is awesome. You hit on that pick. And now, you know, the speed of the game is not going to be surprising. He's going to understand the rigors of playing a longer season. And he has some success as a rookie doing it. So he's going to come in more comfortable. You know, he's going to get better in terms of development because he has another year under his belt. And, you know, at the same time, he has to learn a whole new offense as well. But he had a year of invaluable experience. So let's hope he can be elite at that right tackle spot. Let's hope Tevin Jenkins can stay healthy. Let's hope that somebody can, you know, if it's Ryan Bates, if you're the guy at center, let's hope that we can just get the damn snap to Caleb Williams.
Snap and block. If you can do both.
You know what I mean? Like, this guy's
a legend.
You know, I mean, Nate Davis, you know, I hope that you stay healthy because I think you can be a great player, but health is wealth in this league. So,
yeah.
And, you know, Braxton Jones, he'll come out and say, and I think Braxton Jones, right? People criticize and they talk about Braxton Jones, right? He's a fifth round pick. So when you draft him, he wasn't a high draft pick because they felt like through his evaluations that there were things he needed to work on, right?
Absolutely.
But he came in, he earned a starting job, played a lot of snaps for the Bears. And, you know, for me, I hope he continues to develop as a player. And what I love about Braxton Jones is, right, when he gets up to the podium and they ask him all these hard questions, he's his biggest critic. Right. He comes and says, I didn't have good hand placement. I was terrible against the bull rush. Right. He's his worst critic. And I think when you have a player that's going to be harder on themselves in terms of their own evaluation, that's a player that understands what he needs to do to get better. But now it's also up to that player to take the steps necessary to get better, to perfect his craft or to get better at his craft, because you'll never perfect your craft.
Oh, yeah. That's my thing, though. Right. Like we were there at training camp when he came in and he said, hey, listen, my hand placement is off and I'm not doing good at the bull rush. And guess what? We were also there at the end of the season where he said, my hand placement is off and I'm struggling with the bull rush. You know what I'm saying? Like, I hear you on the, and it's not a shot at Braxton. I think two things can be true. To me, Braxton Jones has absolutely overperformed mm-hmm. from the fifth round pick that he was taken from. He's probably performed in the NFL, I'd say, at a third round level, at a minimum, right? Third round, high third round pick level, somebody that you could put out there and is absolutely a starter in the NFL. But when a season goes by and you're still saying the same things that you struggled with going into that season that you was worked all offseason to try and fix, you're struggling with at the end of that season, when do we have to say, okay, maybe it's just not you?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, maybe this is not to say you can't be a starter, but we have to now scheme our team knowing this is going to be a deficiency for you the entire time that you play. Because I would say through 17 games, I would hope you figured out your hand placement.
Yeah. And it goes back to, like, you know, that's like you're talking about. That's up to the decision makers.
Yeah.
Do they feel that he's competent to be able to play that elite position, that the marquee position on the offensive line, that left tackle spot?
Right.
You know, and if they didn't feel that way, then hey, they would have went out and got, you know, one of the top guys in free agency. They would have picked a left tackle at number 9 in the draft, but they got Kieran Amagaji in the third round.
Yeah.
A guy who I think is he'll be in there to create competition. And I think it's, if he continues to develop, you know, I think you've got a really good offensive line coach. That's why he was retained, and Coach Morgan. And, you know, if you have a guy that has the measurables in terms of what you're looking for in a left tackle, you know, Amagaji has that. But he's a guy who only played, I think he only played 4 games last year.
Yeah.
So
dealt with a torn quad.
Yeah, torn quad. That's painful. I've had a torn quad. That's painful. But, you know, and it's going to be a huge step in competition. You know what I'm saying? You're not in the Ivy League no more. You know, you're going up against Green Bay. You're going to get up against Detroit. You know, you're going to get up against Minnesota.
Yeah.
You know, and Minnesota just drafted another guy. Who they draft? Dallas Turner. They drafted another young edge guy. They lost Danielle Hunter, but they bring in, you know, so.
I'm not going to lie to you either. I'm not going to lie to you. The second I saw Minnesota drafted Dallas Turner, I was ready to flip a table because I was like, God dang it. He's going to be pushing Braxton directly backwards.
But you notice how in the cool thing is when you watch the draft and then you watch how teams within the division, They're making the picks, right, because they're filling needs. But they're also, you look at it in terms of this year, the picks they made was to combat what the other team was doing. So Bears, we get Caleb, we get Rome. What does Detroit do? They start taking cornerbacks. You see what I'm saying? They're tearing it on. Who's the other cornerback they took?
Did they get I want to say Packers got Quinion Mitchell, right? I might be wrong on that. Let me look.
Not Quinion. Tarian Arnold they got. Detroit got Tarian Arnold, but then they drafted another corner in the second round.
We can be accurate here. I got it all right here. Shout out to PFF, one of the best tools purchased. So they got Tarian Arnold. Oh, they got that's right. Gee, I forgot about that. Out of Missouri, Ennis Ray Stroud.
They got Arnold and Ray Stroud. So see what I'm saying? So Bears draft Caleb, grab Odunze. We brought in Keenan Allen. They already saw what DJ Moore did to him last year. We got to get better at corner. Let's get Tarian Arnold out of Alabama. Let's get Rake Stroud of Missouri, right? What do the Vikings do? Bears got a quarterback. We lost a quarterback. You know, we're not relying on just Sam Darnold, right? We got to go get J.J. McCarthy. Oh, the Bears got some weapons. We got to go get another edge. We lost Danielle Hunter. We got to go get Dallas Turner.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying?
First 3 picks were dangerous, man. J.J. McCarthy, Dallas Turner, Kyree Jackson. You already have the wide receivers in place. I said that we're going to – we are probably returning to the black and blue division because
it's going
to
be fun.
Because I think the Vikings are the same as the Bears right now.
Yeah.
Like, I think they went through that. They did the aggressive rebuild thing, but like, now it's got to play out, right? But where I can sit there and say, well, Caleb Williams has DJ Moore, Keenan Allen, Rome Odunze to throw to, I can look at the Vikings and go, well, shoot, freaking J.J. McCarthy or Sam Bradford. If J.J. starts, I don't know if J.J. is going to start or not, but Sam Darnold. Sam Darnold has Justin Jefferson, Jordan Addison, and T.J. Hockenson to throw the football to. Like, it's not a bad situation to be in either.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see. We talk about development and all that stuff, but it's going to be interesting to see what coordinator sets their quarterback up for success, because you got 2 rookie quarterbacks with weapons. So what coordinator, that being Waldron or that being Minnesota's offensive coordinator, who's gonna do a better job of setting up their quarterback to be successful, you know, not putting the whole entire load of the offense on that quarterback. You know, offensively, we will grow as he grows. As he grows, we're going to grow. We'll add in more. We'll install more. But if he's not growing at a rapid rate, then we'll slow down.
Yeah.
And we'll go as he goes. So that's like, you know, that's going to be really interesting to see how that plays out. But without a doubt, man, the NFC North is going to be one of the premier divisions in the NFL. And I'm so excited that I'm going to be right there and I'm going to be able to see all this play out.
J-Mac on the sidelines this year is going to be an absolute.
Make sure you're tuning in.
I'm telling you, we gotta get somebody who's just like either on the sidelines or like right behind you on the field, just with a camera on you the entire time.
Yeah, I am. When I'm walking up and down the
sideline. Yeah, I mean, just keeping a camera. We need a J-Mac cam here at ESPN Chicago. Just like, what the? Coach Flutes, I need you. Listen, we need to be running. Little split. Yeah, I mean,
now I'm telling you, a couple times, yes, he's right in front of me. He's got his call sheet, and I'm like right behind him, like, don't call that. Don't call that.
It's only screens. I only see screens on the call sheet.
I had Minnesota game, man. Oh, man. I was like this. Everybody. Joniak there. We all in the broadcast sleep. Joniak, it's the screen.
We got a real burn. J-Mac, we're going down to Jason McKee on the field. Jason, what are you seeing?
I said, Joniak, it's the screen. Again.
It's a screen. Hey, man, we appreciate y'all for tuning in, showing love. Hit that like button, subscribe to the page. Hopefully, we see less screens from Shane Waldron. Leave that 5-star review. Y'all know what to do. As always, for Jason McKee, it's your boy, Pat the Designer, back at it again. We'll be back tomorrow as J-Mac puts the bear claw on the screen. We'll be back tomorrow with Courtney Cronin, breaking down more Bears football. Can't go wrong there. Plenty of Bears football coming your way. ESPN Chicago, Chicago Bears Podcast. Peace.